This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's 5th of July, 6 a.m. Welcome to the Morning Run. I'm Julian Ng and joined by Wang Xiaoning and Sharad Abdullah. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Julian.
Good morning, Xiaoning.
Friday. I guess you guys are happy today.
Yes, very happy.
Yeah, it's the end of the week.
Yeah, it's going to be a restful weekend, so it's good.
Yeah, no more raya, right?
No more rendang.
All right, we have an interesting lineup for you this morning. And as usual, we're going to talk about some interesting stuff that is the lighter side of business and maybe sometimes not even remotely business.
Okay, mine is a bit more business. It's about fossil fuels, which are like, you know, the baddies in energy. And now with the stroke of a pen or more like a press of the enter button, it's now officially a bad word in a global index provider.
Right, and we're going to talk about roadside business. Should restaurant be allowed to set up tables and chairs in parking spaces? Well, JPJ says no, and you can't report, and you can report, and they can get fined for it. Was this, you know, is this a problem?
Okay, the scourge of society, who has power over the public real estate. And if you have anything to say to us, and we hope you do, do WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Also, tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear from you. So coming up next, we have the role of Instagram stars as well as influencers. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Bob Dylan there with Where Are You Tonight? This is The Morning Run. You're with Julian Xiaoning and Sharitz. We're using a lot of social media these days, and Instagram is very popular, especially among the young. And this is a rise of the phenomenon of the influencers, people who have a lot of followers on Instagram, sometimes to the extent of 50,000, 100,000, even millions of followers. And they are very powerful. And they have one business model, which is advertising.
That's right.
The charge for that, right, to promote certain products. But they have been getting a lot of flack lately for asking for free stuff under the guise of promotional activities. So according to The Guardian, an ice cream man in LA has vowed to charge double for influencers asking for free ice creams.
That's right. So, I mean, initially it was supposed to be a win-win situation where influencers would sort of promote their products, and hence, I guess all these businesses are more than happy to sort of support them in some ways. But I guess they're getting fed up, especially when there's influencers, which they actually haven't made their money with big corporations yet. Hence, one way for them to leverage is, you know, as currency is their followers, I guess. But people are getting fed up over it.
Well, this particular guy, I think he was just tired of people asking him for free ice cream, right? And in his mind, it was like $4. So he's like, if I give everybody a free ice cream, who's going to pay for my kids' school fees, which is point. And he became like a celebrity. So his non-influencer stance actually ironically gave him the most exposure he ever needed.
Yeah, it's a compliment, isn't it? If a very powerful influencers ask for something from you, it means that there is something good about your product. And the thing is that they... The question is whether they offer some value in return, because if they advertise... I guess a lot of influencers promote artisanal products, which are like small businesses. So if they promote your product to 500,000 followers or even 50,000 followers, is that not a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, that could be a good thing. I mean, if you look at Malaysia's top influencers like Siti Nurhaliza, they have followers like over millions, like 6 million or so, and Niloufar. And I think this industry is sort of peaking as well. I mean, it has been around. Influencers have been around for the past, I don't know, maybe more than close to 5 or 6 years. And all these new ones, whether or not they can still gain any followers, and people are probably getting maybe tired of the whole thing. They're not as convinced over the whole thing in comparison to how it was before.
I'm just curious, how do you measure whether these people actually drive businesses to your shop if you were a shop owner?
Good question. I mean, it's just like traditional advertising, right? If you, as a traditional business, you advertise in a newspaper or you advertise on a pre-roll on YouTube or, you know, during a video on Facebook, your ad comes up. How do you actually measure how much business comes your way as a result of that? The ROI of advertising, basically.
I guess it's just immediately after they've been published and whether or not in the next couple of weeks and months, whether there's been a spike on their business. I mean, these people are either celebrities or experts. And again, they talk about these products. And I guess they're just like MPs, you know, in some in some ways they do have people that they can influence in that sense.
Actually, there is a very direct measurement, because when people click on your website, or you get like immediately a surge in followers after, I guess the advertisers would have their own Instagram account or social media accounts as well. And you get an immediate surge after a certain influencer talking about your product. Then that's one way the positive impact can be seen.
Yeah, and there are many types of influencers, right? I mean, if you look online and they tell you there's like celebrity, which has like maybe more than a million, there are categorizations of influencers. So you've got macro, which is between 500,000 and a million, middle influencers, which is 10 to 500,000, and even these things called micro influencers, which is like 1,000 to 10,000.
Yeah.
So I guess you must know your product. Which target are you kind of looking at for an influencer, right? Because if you're doing this, like you said, this niche product, you may not need a celebrity to actually kind of push it through, right? Maybe just a micro influencer is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's also very hard work. I mean, in spite of the hate that they're getting right now, right? I don't know how representative this article is. You know, you do get certain prominent influencers getting some hate, but a lot of influencers out there, they have to generate content on a daily basis, and that can be quite stressful. Even on YouTube, right? If you've seen some of the videos that are put up there by certain influencers, they're actually very well produced videos.
It's a lot of work. I mean, it's like a real job, and it involves like, it's like running a business.
It's like running a publishing company. I mean, we go through a lot of stress trying to come out with news every day, right? Imagine if you're a one-man show producing YouTube content or updating your Instagram account, that is quite stressful.
And you've got to like rise against, I mean, beat everybody, right? Because there's just so much out there. There's so much YouTube content. There's so much Instagram. You've got to be clever. You've got to be witty.
And that constant engagement as well. It's on top of that, you know, production is that constant engagement, which is, again, it takes about your entire attention.
So that's actually not to say that there are no conflicts within that, because a certain powerful influence, certain powerful influencers can actually take advantage of their situation. All right, we are coming back with more interesting talk, and please do WhatsApp us or tweet us if you have any opinion about what we're talking about. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Harmony Hall by Vampire Weekend, BFM 89.9. Thanks for sticking with us here on The Morning Run. Julian Shaoning and Sharitz here with you. Now, the investment world is massive, and there are many professional designers of indices whose job is to decide what represents performance of markets and sectors. For example, we have the Dow Jones, the S&P, as well as the FTSE or the FTSE, which also maintains our very own FBM KLTI. So recently they were looking at the oil and gas sector, and they decided to change the name of the ONG sector to non-renewable sector. So the question is whether this is merely a name tweak or representative of a greater trend towards environmental awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, oil and gas has been getting bad press over the past couple of decades, I think, especially with they are also probably the reason why some countries go to war and so forth. And also climate change is one of those things that they speak about. And it's also, the business is, basically, they're going through a sunset, aren't they? I mean, people are going through, looking through other renewable energies and so forth. So I guess there's a need for them to shift away from that.
I'm not sure whether that's a sunset industry, but maybe just a greater clarity in terms of the classification. So, of course, you have energy, you have renewable, and then this is the non-renewable, right? So they want to differentiate it. I think partially this is also the rise of the what do you call this, ESG funds, right? Which focus on environmental, social concerns. And they just really want to buy energy stocks, but it has to be renewable. So if in the past, when it was all classified together, perhaps it was hard to differentiate one company from another. So now you can know exactly this company just does wind or this company just does solar.
Yeah. So ESG is environmental, social, and governance, right?
Yeah.
Governance. So you would rule out any of those companies that harm the environment. And therefore, it's a huge trend today. People are buying into a lot of ESG funds.
Yes.
A lot of money is going into those funds.
There was a recent research by the Malaysian capital markets, actually, regarding the asset management industry in Malaysia. And the ESG funds is the fastest growing, even here.
Yeah.
So this just makes sense, I guess, that investors can then see with greater clarity what they're buying or what they need to buy.
Yeah, and at the same time, I think there's also that introduction of, for example, investing. People are asking, you know, people are promoting to invest on something that you believe in. Again, things like environmental, things that have anything to do with climate change, renewable energy, and so forth. I mean, those are, I guess, it's a movement. It's becoming a trend.
Yeah, I think it's reflective of that. And it's actually a very big business as well, business of coming up with indices. I mean, it's not just as simple as stock selection, right? You have to have the index which people will trust and have confidence in. And every day we're talking about, you know, rattling off FBM KLCI up 1 or 2 points. It has to be, to a certain extent, representative of your market or your economy. So if you change the name of it, and if that doesn't represent anything, then you're not doing something right.
Yeah, it's just a hollow action, isn't it?
Correct.
In a way.
So this is very serious. This is serious stuff.
Especially for passive funds. Even if they're not ECG funds, right? But they're passive funds. With this name change, does this mean that they just automatically have to reduce the weight or the types of stocks, the number of stocks, and sell down their traditional oil and gas names? So this has wider implications for the oil and gas sector.
Yeah. And I think passive funds is also very much on the rise. A lot of money have poured into products like ETFs and so on. So as you say, Xiaoning, a lot of the ETF managers or index managers would have to take note of this and adjust their portfolios either by buying or selling. But the movement as a whole, I don't think that oil and gas is a dying sector. I think it's just, again, like the influencers, they're getting a bad press. Today, you know, if you want to consume fossil fuel, sadly, that is the cheapest fuel that you can put into your car, and all the other stuff that you, or your vehicles, right? All the other stuff that you use in the form of renewables. I'm not sure whether they have reached that point where it becomes economical to use.
Not at this current juncture. Even if you just look at solar for this current moment, for in terms of households, what we can do. Tenaga Renewable guides that if your electricity bill is not more than 600 ringgit, it's not worth it unless this is something you want to do for the environment, because you will end up paying more. Because at the moment, solar panels are just expensive. Just the basic solar panel on the roof is about 14,000 ringgit.
And I take it that this change of name, for example, would have some implication on regulation as well. There's a lot of law that probably uses this sort of term. I mean, things like oil and gas. And I guess in some ways, once you start, whether or not there's a need to look into all these laws as well.
Well, this is a private effort, so I'm not sure whether it will influence policy. But for sure, I think the idea is very good because of this focus on environmental awareness. All right, we're coming up to the 6:30 news, and after that, we'll be talking about chopping. And in the meantime, here's Naked As We Come by Iron and Wine, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was The Cure with Friday. I'm in love. Welcome back to The Morning Run. You're with Julian Ng, Wong Xiaoning, and Sharitz Abdullah. Now, chop is probably one of the most flexible words in Malaysia. And it represents so many things, right? Like, this thing is not really mine for the moment. I'm chopping it. I'm taking over its ownership for a while. And a lot of people do it for like tables in restaurants and parking lots and so on. I've seen people standing in a parking lot to wait for their car, like driven by their friend, to turn around to arrive at the parking lot. And restaurants do it, take this to a mass, larger scale, right? And so bad news for them, the Road Transport Department is threatening to fine them $2,000, 2,000 ringgit, whenever they chop the parking spaces outside for the tables and chairs.
So there must be a mixed reaction about this, right? I mean, as much as a lot of us feel that this is not right, but at the same time, especially when it comes to restaurants...
What is not right?
Chopping parking.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
Yes.
So with that, I mean, the whole mixed reaction is that we know that it's wrong, but at the same time, when restaurants do open up their tables and chairs at these places, I mean, you still see a lot of them sitting there and they quite enjoy the whole idea of being outdoor and being just enjoying the evening.
Oh, please come to my neighborhood, JBJ, please, because they are these guys who just, you know, take over huge stretches of car parks. And to me, it's like, there's no end to it, right? And what about us residents who want to park there legitimately? Where do we go? And they are very, some of them, I don't know about you, but they get very aggressive if you tell them off.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Unfairly aggressive.
Yeah, unfairly aggressive. You know, they like put, I don't know, table chairs, flower pots, you name it. And then if you just have a little bit of argument, like, are you allowed to do this? They really, really kind of give it to you and you get quite intimidated.
It's thuggish behavior, right, from chopping. Chopping is supposed to be friendly, but when you become thuggish about it, it just loses its appeal. And to me, this is like a microcosm of running a country, because do you want to focus on socialism, social democracy, where, you know, the supposedly the more deserving members of society, they get to chop, right? They get to chop the places for themselves. Or you want to focus on a competitive, capitalistic, market-driven environment, right? Where no chopping, everyone has a fair share, a fair share of competing for those spaces. There are pros and cons, you know, because we don't have enough parking. Mm. And what do you want to help the SME to allow them to chope, or to allow the small guy to chope the parking lot, or you're gonna be total hardcore on this and promote free competition for this?
Only you can turn this discussion into such a highbrow one, Julian.
I'm sorry.
With your chope becomes this discussion debate over socialism and capitalism.
Think of this auntie who goes out to do her marketing in a grocery shop from a mom and pop store, and she has no parking, right?
Yeah.
She's got children to take care of at home, and she wants to do just a quick park, illegally double park out there, I mean, chopping that spot as it were, go in, dash into the grocery shop, come out, buy food for her children, right? Do you want to appeal to those kind of socialistic concerns, or, you know, say, no, you cannot do that, and therefore the family unit breaks down?
Such a drama, Julian. The family unit breaks down. I mean, at most, she's inconvenienced, but I don't think her family unit is going to break down. That's an exaggeration. My point.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay. Last year, I think it was last year in Taman Tun, right? The DBKL was very strict on it.
The double park?
Yeah, the double parking. The moment you got out of a car, you come back and you see your car being clamped, right? And a lot of people were complaining about that. So which side would you be on? Would you be on the side of the double parkers who get clamped with a $300 fine? Or do you take a more easy approach to this?
I'm the hardcore, because I think that otherwise there are many shades
there
of grey, right?
There you go. You're the capitalist.
I'm the capitalist, the hardcore that breaks up families. Yeah, because otherwise there's no end to this. People will come up with all sorts of excuses why they did it, right? And then the whole situation becomes just a complete mess.
No, but there are ways to, you know, make sure that this is legitimate. I mean, you know that when you park for a quick bite, or, you know, not a quick bite, but for a quick buy at the, you know, at a grocery store or something, you can be courteous about it. And sometimes,
how do you be courteous about it?
Just leave your number at the very least. If you know you're going to be there, if you're going to be there for like less than 5 minutes, then you can tell yourself that it's okay. Then worse off,
you block the road though.
Yeah, and if I'm trying to get out my parking lot and you're blocking me, it's inconvenient to me, right? And sometimes you call these guys, they don't pick up their phone. And then it delays delays you trying to get out of that parking lot.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just a matter of gauging whether or not. If you're going to be there for 5 minutes, I think I can explain that to someone. It's like, hey, look, this is a real quick one. It's an emergency. Sometimes there are circumstances, like Julian would have said, like, you know, there are some old ladies that maybe just need a quick getaway and then you need to go to a restroom or something, and then I'll be back. But it's when it goes beyond 5 minutes, and it's just tough to justify and explain yourself.
Okay, I guess we have a room of very polarized views here. Tell us what you think by WhatsApping us 0187898899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Morning Run. And that was Nothing to Find by The War on Drugs. I guess we are at war this morning, because the running theme, I think, can be summarized as anger, right? This morning, we are angry about the influencers. We're angry about the oil and gas producers. And we're also angry about the choppers. We've got some responses, actually. This is bound to get response, right?
Yes, because it's something so close to everyone's heart if you live in KL, right?
Absolutely.
So that we've got this WhatsApp from Mr. Ho, who actually says, breaking traffic rules in the name of socialism. Julian, you are misguided. Rules are not meant to be broken. If the rule is appropriate, then change it. Because if we break rules and regulations as we wish, then we stop becoming a civilization and society. And without society, there's no socialism.
Well, actually, I'm not invested one way or another. I'm just asking the question of our personal conflicts. Because we like that situation when it suits us, right? When we have an emergency and we double park and get out of the car. Compared that hat that we're wearing to when we're a driver being inconvenienced by that. It boils down to how things are planned as well. For example, if there are not enough parking and you're forced to park at $40 an hour, is that something that you accept? If those rules are being made to totally eliminate double parking and chopping and all that, and to solve the problem of this kind of rule breaking, right? A hardline. Policing of double parkers and traffic offenders in the face of much bigger problems in the country, right? For example, do you jail a PTPTN borrower who has not paid? Do you jail them? Do you take a hardline approach to this? Foreign workers, for example, they're underpaid and sometimes very poor conditions they're living in, but that they are here all in the name of keeping our food prices down in restaurants.
I mean... But even if you have solutions to these problems, well, Julian, you've gone all the way to deep discussion. But even if you have some simple solutions, for example, if we go back to parking, all right, and we use Uptown, which is everyone's quite familiar with, there's actually plenty of parking in Uptown in all the buildings, right? And the parking prices aren't that expensive on the weekends. But yet the place is chock-a-block with these choke parkers going 2-3 lanes deep, you know.
Yeah.
And so if you have convenience for them, but they still don't want to do it, then what do you do?
Yeah, but the thing about law, Julian, is that I think there are also, for example, with this discussion that we're having, that there are discretions. Law sometimes, it defines what's black and white, supposedly, but at the same time, there are discretions. That's why you have maximum penalty and the minimum penalty as well. And there are instances when... Like when someone parks 5 minutes and just justifying just to have a quick buy in comparison to someone who has no regard over your sense of time, your time and those are the people that should be, I guess, penalized in a heavy way. So even law itself has discretionary framework.
But you also want to think about how the national budget is being spent. For example, if you want to, this may be quite a leap, but if you wanted to preserve the family unit, for example, right, you have to spend a lot of money on that. Daycare centres, setting up allowances for paternal leave, maternal leave, and things like that, right? Do you give handouts to family? But if you're really strict about the rules... Then you have to split up the budgetary pie as well. So if there are some non-monetary concessions, right, just giving concessions to each other, will that work? Or do we have to just enshrine it into rules, as what KY Ho is saying, rule-based governance, right? Put everything into rules and follow the rules 100%. Is that how society is made up of as well?
I think the issue is that As a human being, we are always tempted, if we're given an inch, to then take that mile, right? And then we just go too far and we don't think about other people in society and the inconsideration that we have given, we have kind of put on them.
Now, here's a solution. Alvin, why not have one special parking in front of popular grocery stores with a 5-minute timer? I absolutely subscribe to this to this kind of creativity in solving the problem, right? Because if you park after 5 minutes, you'd be charged punitive parking fares. Maybe that will work. All right, thank you so much for your comments. It's always nice to discuss both sides of the story. And we're coming up to the 7 o'clock news, and after that, we'll discuss biggest business news of the day. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.